Now here's your host, Michael Corbin.
And good evening and welcome to this edition of the Paranet Continuum, home of no-nonsense, common-sense paranormal talk radio. Well, tonight we've got a lot of ground to cover tonight, but the top off the beginning of the hour, to let you know what we're going to be talking about tonight, my guest is going to be William Burns, who is the co-author of the controversial book, The Day After Roswell. Now, this book is controversial for many reasons, chiefly because of what the author, Philip J. Corso, says he was doing when he was attached to the Foreign Technology Division at the Pentagon in the early 60s. And, of course, the book's subtitle says that it's a former Pentagon official revealing that the U.S. government's shocking UFO cover-up. And we're going to get into a lot of that tonight with my guest, Bill Burns. Okay, the book that has been very controversial is The Day After Roswell. And one of the things I want to say before we bring up our guest, Philip J. Corso, who's a colonel in the United States Air Force, retired, he announced in his new book, The Day After Roswell, that U.S. semiconductor industry was kickstarted by analysis of wreckage from the crash of an extraterrestrial spacecraft in Roswell, New Mexico in 1947. Now, Paranet has dug up some old information on the invention of the transistor from a Signetics publication called Circuit News, which was published in the 1960s, which proves that the development of semiconductors, and specifically the transistor, was well on its way by 1947. Now, the press release announcing the invention of the transistor, though dated almost exactly a year after Roswell, is predated by log entries in William Shockley's notebook from 1939, in which he discussed the principles of a transistor. Now, portions of the Signetics documents are going to be reproduced in our upcoming issue of Continuum Magazine, which is our quarterly publication. And, of course, I'll give you information about how you can get a subscription to that. But anyway, we're going to talk about this and other things with Mr. Burns on this book. And, of course, one other thing that we will probably discuss tonight is Senator Thurmond's strong reaction to the use of his foreword in a book that he claims he was writing a foreword to called I Walk with Giants, where Corso recounts his wartime activities and recollections of a retired Army officer. Now, of course, his press secretary, Chris Simcoe, issued a press release some several weeks ago before the book actually was published, denouncing that this statement, this foreword that was used by Thurmond, was done deceptively and was not properly used. And, of course, she said that Thurmond says there was no Roswell, there was no UFO crash, and there was no UFO material that he knew of that Corso had access to. So this is kind of a sticky mess. And so we're going to get to my guest tonight, Bill Burns, who is a co-author on this book. And so we're ready as soon as we get him there. Okay. 1-800-836-2009, 1-800-836-2009 is our call-in number tonight. And so without further ado, I'd like to bring up my guest who is joining us tonight from California. He is William Burns. Good evening.
How are you?
Good. And how are you?
I'm great.
Well, thanks for being on the program tonight.
Sure thing.
Bill, I'm curious, before we get too far into this interview, give me a bottom line kind of a thumbnail sketch of what The Day After Roswell is about.
Day After Roswell is the personal memoir of Colonel Philip J. Corso, who was in the Army, who describes his experiences with the material that the Army pulled out of the Roswell crash in 1947 and how he re-engineered this technology into American industry and back into the marketplace.
Okay. So he, in essence, supplied bits and pieces of this material to the military-industrial complex.
That's exactly right. He was the officer at the Pentagon at the Foreign Technology Desk responsible for taking foreign technology, which is a very broad term, which means anything not coming out of the United States, taking foreign technology and getting it to industries, defense contractors primarily, who would incorporate it into weapons and ultimately into, where applicable, consumer products.
Okay. Now, before we get into the meat of that, one of the things that I kind of like to address, and that is the controversy that surrounded the book before it was actually on the market, and that was the press release from Senator Thurman's office concerning the book.
Yes. Indeed, there was a controversy with that. Originally, well, this would go back 30 years to a point at which Colonel Corso had worked for Strom Thurmond as an intelligence analyst and as the kind of chief investigator of the internal security government, internal security subcommittee for the Senate Judiciary Committee. So he and Strom Thurmond were old friends, and of course Strom was, Senator Thurmond was very good friends with Trudeau's, with Corso's boss at the Pentagon, Lieutenant General Arthur Trudeau,
mm-hmm.
who prior to becoming the chief of Army R&D was the head of Army Intelligence G2. So he and Thurmond, very good friends dating way back.
Okay.
And Corso became acquainted with Thurmond through his association with, he was at the Eisenhower White House in the middle 50s, and Strom Thurmond, of course, came to the Senate in 1954, so very quickly he and Corso found themselves on the same sides of lots of issues. Obviously, Corso was coming out of the Army in World War II, was a basic cold warrior, I guess is the best way to describe
right.
him. Of course,
mm-hmm.
he was at a hot war all the time because he was on the front lines there. So he and Thurmond worked together, became political associates, friends, and after Corso retired from the Army in 1963, he went to work for Thurmond in the Senate. And basically, the two men had a long, long association over the years. They remained friends. And, I would say maybe 6-7 years ago, Corso began writing a book about his experience in Army intelligence and all the great men he knew.
Okay.
Man had gone through World War II, so he knew Winston Churchill, Dwight Eisenhower, Charles de Gaulle. I mean, you name it, he'd crossed paths, and it was a very intriguing book about his perceptions of all these men that he knew from the 1940s through the 1970s and how he crossed their paths. And that book was called I Walked with Giants, and Thurmond so much liked that manuscript that he wrote a foreword for it. Years later, you flash forward something like 7 years, 5 years, with Corso completing this manuscript with me and saying, gee, I wonder if Strom Thurmond would write a foreword for this book, Day After Roswell. So he said, it's worth a shot. Call him up. What do you think? Calls him up, makes an appointment, travels to Washington. Coincidentally, it's the day he had a meeting with John Glenn about one of the projects in this book that we talk about called Project Horizon,
mm-hmm.
Delivers the color copy of Project Horizon to Senator Glenn, to Senator Thurmond, and then in person asks Senator Thurmond, he says, you know, I'm writing a different book than I Walk with Giants. I'm writing a book about my experiences with, wink, wink, you know, Roswell-style foreign technology. Two of them were in the office alone. His main aide is off in another corner of the room. Thurmond's office, by the way, in the Capitol is huge. It's kind of like a small ballroom, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
So it's easy to stand on one side and basically need a cell phone to hear a conversation on the other side of the room. And Thurmond says, oh, sure, Phil, anything. He says, well, no, really. I mean, this is about the Roswell material. He says, yes, yes, Phil, anything. Just anything for you. So he says, send me whatever you need to send me. And Corso says, well, I'm going to send you the rights and permissions form from Pocketbooks. He says, of course. You send it, I'll write you a new one. Well, Pocketbooks faxes the form to me. I overnight the form to Phil. He overnights the form to Thurmond. Thurmond just signs it, sends it back, and then sends a new forward that he wrote or he dictated and sends to Phil.
Okay, hold that thought right there. We're going to go to break, and when we come back, we'll get into a little bit more of that. And, of course, there's a lot in this book. We're going to find out, is this really the smoking gun? Because this book claims an awful lot. The book is called The Day After Roswell. My guest is William Burns. He is the co-author, and we're going to talk about that. My guest is the co-author of The Day After Roswell. Of course, it's a controversial book, and it's quite amazing, some of the things that Philip Corso has claimed that he did while he was attached to the Foreign Technology Division at the Pentagon. And Bill, may I call you Bill?
You can.
Well, back to this thing about the press release, and we'll move on from this. But I'm just curious. Strom Thurmond's press release was very, very, sharp in denouncing, that he believes in the UFO cover-up and in anything that has to do with Roswell.
Right.
Why would he do this in light of the fact that he already, told Corso that he would do it?
Well, Effery told Corso he would do it and sent the new press release, by the way, just sent it right out.
Mm-hmm.
Corso sent him back Corso sent him back the old forward so that there was no misunderstanding. That was a separate forward for a brand new book. He evidently did not tell his staff what he'd done, or his staff was not clear, or something happened at the staff level. The press release for the book comes out, and basically there on the cover, forward by Strom Thurmond. Well, the line forming around his office, from the New York Times, Washington Post, you name it, Daily News, Philly Inquirer, the line around Strom Thurmond's office dealing with his press people,
mm-hmm.
I mean, you would have thought he was giving away free vacation. It was that intense.
Do you think that they realized that he was committing possibly political suicide?
Well, what we heard, and we heard this really through a back channel. Nobody called us up and said, this is what's happening. But it was a back channel that said the government said to him, listen, Senator Thurmond, you are not going to be on record as endorsing a book that says we won the Cold War by using alien technology. So find any way you can, but get out of this. So the first phone call was from a public relations person who was downright hostile. The next calls were, look, let's seek some accommodation here, but the senator cannot be on record as endorsing this book. I mean, what were you thinking?
Mm-hmm.
So there was a lot of backing and forthing, and he kind of issued a press release, which, given the first reaction to this, was actually quite mild. He basically said, I can't really say that the government used alien technology to win the Cold War. I don't know of any cover-up. I'm fourth in line to succeed the presidency. How can I say a cover-up took place? When in reality, we kind of knew that the Senate leadership got to him and said, listen, you cannot have the position you have and say this officially as the head of the Armed Services Committee and fourth in line to succeed the president. So that's what happened.
How did you get involved in this project?
I got involved in it obliquely. I am not a UFO writer in the UFO community at all.
Mm-hmm.
I'm basically a true crime writer, and I do a lot of writing about history. But I do like personal memoirs and have basically collaborated on a few of them. But I was really brought in. Colonel Corso, about 5 years ago, was retained as a consultant, a historical consultant, basically, to a company that was trying to do a motion picture or a television motion picture on Army and Air Force POWs,
mm-hmm.
Particularly those from the Vietnam era. And, in fact, that's a book that I'm working on now still. And Colonel Corso was on MacArthur's staff in Korea and had negotiated Operation Little Switch, Big Switch, and had a whale of a story to tell about the men we left behind after World War II, Vietnam, and Korea. So we were really, they had retained him to just give historical advice and read material, and in working with him, and they said, Bill, why don't you work with the colonel, see if there's a book here. So as we were doing this, I really got hooked on his stories of World War II more than Korea, where in World War II he was the commander of Rome after the Nazis evacuated Rome. They retreated up the Italian peninsula. And he basically became the first New World leader after the fall of Rome. I mean, like how many thousands of years? The first man from the New World to rule Rome.
Mm-hmm.
And he was telling these stories about the end of World War II, the days before the Nazis surrendered, Operation Paperclip, Swiss gold, Nazi treasure, the attempts of the communists to infiltrate the OSS, their success in infiltrating the OSS and how that created the National Security Council and what we didn't know.
Strange how all this stuff kind of links up, doesn't it?
Exactly. Well, that's the story he was telling from a military perspective, and he saw this happening in Rome, never could get the word out. Eisenhower kind of knew it, but by then it was too late. So I thought, what a great book. So we began to write a book basically called The Day After the Fall of Rome.
How did Roswell come into this?
In discussing the path of American history from Rome, Corso said, yeah, you know, my last post in the Army was I was the head of Army R&D. I was the head of foreign technology in Army R&D. And, oh, that's nice. And he said, yeah. And then he kind of offhandedly said how scientists he had, whose paths he'd crossed as one of the people who helped set up Operation Paperclip in the closing days of the war, turned up on his brain trust, and he began talking about Nazi experience with UFOs. Well, our ears perked up. We said, what do you mean Nazi experience with UFOs? And he says, well, you know, the Foo Fighters, the exotic weapons. One of my scientists, he said, who worked for us in Army R&D, was part of our brain trust, was Dr. Hermann Oberth. And he'd said that the Nazis had stumbled across alien technology during World War II and were trying to reverse engineer it to develop weapons.
Was this in the form of a crash retrieval or some other method of...
He'd say, because I don't think he knew.
Okay.
And then he drops this bombshell. He said, yeah, we tried to do the same thing in Army R&D. We were only partially successful. And we're in a room. We said, what? He said, yeah, we tried to do the same thing the Nazis did with regard to the Roswell material, the German scientists at Peenemünde. We were more successful. They were more successful than we were in some things, basically getting a plane, getting a craft to levitate. And by now, our heads are spinning. He says, but we were more successful because we actually were able to engineer the laser as a military weapon. Well, at that point, you could imagine a room, you know, coffee is spilling.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, yeah. He said, the Russians weren't successful at all. And so basically we coughed out, well, how did you know? He said, well, we had all our contacts over in the KGB. They'd infiltrated the CIA so much, we could play back their own agents, and when they defected, they would come to the Army because they had already infiltrated the CIA and didn't want the CIA to turn them back in. So we knew the Russians were unsuccessful with the UFO material they had. And so basically he describes this kind of like worldwide retrieval of alien technology. The Brits, the British had some, the French had some. But by and large, the Germans during the war tried desperately, Oberth tried desperately to engineer this, but he said the German scientists hated Hitler, hated the Nazis, and they basically wanted to keep this because they knew the Nazis would lose the war and give it, they were hoping, to the United States because they were really scared to death of the Russians.
Okay, hold that thought. We'll come back to that in just a moment. Very fascinating story, very interesting. The Day After Roswell is the book we're talking about, and the co-author that we have on the program tonight is William J. Burns, who co-authored the book. And, of course, we're talking about Lieutenant Colonel retired Philip J. Corso and his experience during the 60s with the Roswell material. Stay tuned. Bill, what are some of the claims now that Colonel Corso has made concerning, like, for example, semiconductors?
Well, what he said was that in the crash, one of the items that were retrieved were a series of integrated circuit chips, and that what the Army did, this is even before he got involved in it, was that the Army had tried to get some of this technology over to Bell Labs because they knew that in 47, 48, there were, I think, two patents on it, 47, 48, William Shockley, who was working at Bell Labs, had patented the transistor, the semiconductor.
Right.
And so they tried to get these circuit chips over to Bell Labs, I guess, as soon after the crash as possible. Nathan Twining, in the first weeks, days after the crash at Roswell, nobody really knew what they had.
Now, for those in the audience who don't know who Nathan Twining was a general, wasn't he?
Twining was the head. Lieutenant General Nathan Twining,
mm-hmm,
was the head of the, I think it was the Air Materiel Command.
Right.
The Army Air Force Air Materiel Command over at Wright Field. He later became, after the services separated, one of the generals of the Air Force.
Right.
And he was a general who would have been immediately responsible for, quote-unquote, Air Force technology, Army Air Force technology.
Mm-hmm.
And he wrote a number of memos regarding flying saucers, flying discs.
Right. There's a famous one that circulates around.
That's right. There were a couple. One was in the months after the crash, I think in 48, and
right.
The other one was in 52.
Wasn't he the one that started Project Grudge or signed one of the
exactly.
two?
Exactly. He was the one under whose command, basically, these early kind of like UFO analytical projects of operations began.
Okay.
Were projects, not operations.
Right.
And he wrote that the most appropriate place for the analysis to figure out what this UFO technology was, and of course UFO encompassed more than flying saucers. I mean, that's another kind of misunderstood thing, was the Foreign Technology Division of Research and Development.
What other things would it have incorporated?
Well, by the late 50s, of course, downed Russian satellites.
Oh, okay. I follow what you're saying.
By the middle 50s, experimental aircraft from other countries.
Just anything that might fall out of the air.
Anything that fell out of the air that was not ours,
right.
or it was ours but not generally known, would have gone into was an unidentified flying object.
Okay.
Flying saucers were, of course, kind of a subset of that.
How about crash dummies?
Crash dummies. Well, only the dummies themselves would have been an unidentified flying object. Well, we knew what they were.
Right, right. Vince and Larry.
Right, exactly. The Pep Boys, right?
Right.
So he suggested early in that foreign technology be the place where this stuff is analyzed. So it was foreign technology, but it was really more of a logistics command than something set up to do this. It was really badly organized until Trudeau took it over in 1959. So it was appropriate that foreign technology at that point be the place where this stuff was analyzed. Well, 1961, Corso found these burnt, charred IC chips, basically fully functional or fully developed integrated circuitry, minute, in the file of Roswell material in the Pentagon. And the Army began to send these, again, as they had done earlier, to those specific companies where integrated circuitry, integrated transistor circuits were being developed. So the Army didn't invent the transistor. The Army didn't give it to Bell Labs, and then suddenly Bell Labs 3 weeks later invented a transistor. The Army specifically went to those companies who were defense contractors, because they had to have an existing defense contract relationship,
mm-hmm.
and under the auspice of that ongoing defense contractor relationship, provided them with technology they said came out of crashed Russian aircraft, crashed Czechoslovakian aircraft, in other words, Eastern Bloc technology or technology from hostile countries where we had retrieved some of their material. And they said, what do you think of these? And they said, can you look to see what kind of technology these employ and find a way to build it into your ongoing technological development of similar materials?
So,
sure.
So in essence, what you're saying then is Shockley has the patent
mm-hmm.
on a transistor.
Right.
And the material that Corso handled
mm-hmm.
enhanced this discovery.
Enhanced the development of this. I mean, what they found at Roswell was basically the full employment of what was our very primitive transistor.
Hmm. What other things did they find in that?
Well, Corso found what he said was kind of like a Y-shaped harness. And when he held it up to the light, it was composed of single filament, monofilament threads, looked like spun glass.
Right, which is fiber optics or...
Fiber optics, exactly. When he held it up to the light, there were different colors coming out. And, of course, these two went to Bell Labs. Now, again, we were working on fiber optic transmissions of signals. I think as early as the late 1930s, I'm not sure the date, but this was a technology that we were experimenting with or trying to figure out what it was or how to do something with it for even before the crash at Roswell. So again, we didn't discover fiber optics as a result of the crash at Roswell. What Corso brought was a fully functional piece of circuitry that showed the developers of fiber optics a direction they could go, and of course gave fiber optics, just as it gave the laser, just as it gave super tenacity fibers, just as it gave integrated circuitry, a quantum leap in development.
Was there anything at all in any of this that was unique to anything that we were working on?
Anything that we were working on already?
Yeah.
Night vision. The Germans were employing night vision as a kind of a range finder, sight finder on their tanks in the Panzer divisions at the end of the war. The British had kind of a rudimentary night vision device they were experimenting with, but these were huge, I mean, powered by huge powder devices, I mean, huge compared to what they are today, and they would not function as a tool in the field. They were used for artillery. They were used for armored personnel carriers. So these are devices that were hooked up to kind of looking through the forward window of the tank or trying to first covers open trying to see the dark. That's really what they were used for. Also, what you found on the German body was the inner eye was kind of separated from the eye itself.
Okay, let me stop.